Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Lori Strawn, and as usual, is my good friend, compadre, and co-host, Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hey, Lori, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. Finally, spring getting to its place around here.
Well, that's a good thing. Well, today's show is a celebration of what I consider the greatest bookstore in America, possibly the entire world, HK Books in Wichita, Kansas. Located in a quaint row house on Douglas Avenue, 8th Day carries books of all sorts, from poetry and fairy tales to nonfiction and biographies. But all of the books have a spiritual component. So it's the ultimate place for the spiritually minded reader, much like Alice and I. One of the things that makes 8th Day special is their business cards, which they include as bookmarks with every purchase. Each one carries a quotation about reading, books, faith, God, life, all sorts of wonderful things. So for today's show, we're going to ponder a few of these bookmark quotations with the promise that there will certainly be more down the line. First, a quotation that explains the name of the bookstore from Jean Danleu's The Bible and Liturgy. The 7 days of the week are the image of the time of this world and the 8th day of life everlasting. Sunday is the liturgical commemoration of the 8th day, and at the same time, a memorial of the resurrection and prophecy of the world to come. Now, I think anybody who is our age and remembers Schoolhouse Rock remembers that the number 8 placed on its sign is a symbol meaning infinity.
Infinity.
So I think it's an apt and a cool name for a bookstore.
Well, I think it is, too. And I'm wondering if these – well, there's also – isn't Kathleen Desitel's place in Chicago called 8th Day Center for Justice?
It is.
Peace and Justice? I never made that connection. I always figured it was something scriptural, but I thought that's kind of cool.
It is.
Are these bookmarks handmade individually or what?
Well, they look like a business card. You know, just like any printed business card. It says 8th Day Books at the top, the address is at the bottom, and in the middle there's some sort of quotation from somebody famous, maybe someone you haven't heard of, but is, you know, a saint or, you know, a writer of ancient texts. And they're always just beautiful little quotations that they give you a glimpse into something that maybe you hadn't been able to find the words for.
Huh. And absconded with a whole stack of these? Is that what happened? You've just been shopping there for a long time?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I have quite a number of them because I would say most of my show books come from 8th Day.
Oh,
that's
interesting.
The ones we do on this show.
Well, thanks for the clarification, Lori. I'm sure we were all confused there. Well, I was just laughing because I can see you grabbing handfuls of these things, like I see myself sometimes taking a couple of Splenda packets off of a restaurant table, so I had a good mental picture.
I would like the
job of designing these business cards and selecting the quotations. That would be awesome.
Yes, it really would. So let's start with the one that inspired me to really do this particular episode. It says, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle." Philo of Alexandria. What sorts of battles are we all fighting, Alice? And why should this prompt us to be kind to one another?
Well, we are fighting. I was just talking this morning to one of my staff members about someone else we know who has this sort of off-putting way of walking toward you in the hallway that you just think, oh gosh, if I don't move to the side, she's charging over me. And I just said, you know, she, I honestly have known her a long time, and I know she carries just she just battles inside herself. They're just, it's like voices are in there. She's talking to herself. She's anxious. You know, just that alone, just the emotion that we carry and the kind of unstoppable thoughts that happen. You know, we carry, I mean, really, if you think about it, we carry, it's all the baggage of our whole lives. Good baggage, bad baggage, heavy baggage, light baggage. Some days we feel it differently, but it's all in there. And and we're fighting with our, I mean, don't you fight within yourself sometimes? I say to myself, oh, should I say that to that person or should I keep quiet? What should I do? I mean, it's just this, you know, self-centered whatever.
And yet, it made me think of another one of their cards, which is a quotation from G.K. Chesterton that says, "We are all in the same boat in a stormy seas, and we owe each other a terrible loyalty." Because don't we always kind of feel like we're each in our own little boat on the stormy sea? And so, you know, we really just need to row for ourselves and bail out our own boat. When in reality, of course, we're bound together, like it or not. So how a person responds to that, I mean, you can deny it and you can be unkind, but in what way does that make your own battle any easier? How does it keep your own boat from sinking, you know?
Right. It's like when you're rowing a boat, a crew boat or a scull or whatever they call them. You know, that if one person starts to back off and take out their bad day on everybody else, it impacts the whole crew.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, and I, you know, don't you have days where you just think, I just, you know, I just wish people could see the inside of me to know, because I know some days I'm crabby or just short-tempered or whatever, and I just try so hard to remember that everybody else is like that, and it's just, it's so hard. It's hard to remember it when your feelings are hurt or, you know, it's just, it is, but I think we are all kind of hurt little creatures walking around.
And yet, as separate as we feel, we're not separate at all.
No, we really are not. We're so much more alike. You know, I was thinking about this last night when I was watching the town hall, just getting more and more and more physically angry listening to Donald Trump. And then there was this little voice of mine saying, inside that somewhere, there is just a little boy. You know, there's a person in there who I may never know because his exterior is so crusty to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Wow, trying to find a commonality with Donald Trump, that's something.
Well, you know, Lori, I work at it.
Yes, you do.
We should probably just move on. This could get ugly fast.
Okay. Well, here's a quotation from Vladimir Lossky's The Mystical Theology of the Eastern Church. Quote, "For the eyes of faith are necessary to recognize not only the divine person, but also each human person who is created in the image of God." What do you think about that quotation? Do you think it's true?
I think it's lovely, and it dovetails so beautifully into today's reading is the story of the road to Emmaus. And there are a couple of stories in the octave of Easter as we go through here this week about just people seeing an image of God and beginning to understand that the Jesus they knew on earth is gone, but that there is work to do and there's a gospel to live out. And it just kind of brings this to mind. That's what fleshed this out for me when I read it this morning. Because we really are. We are the only true representatives of Jesus now on this earth. I mean, if we cannot see through our eyes of faith to see and understand the good and the God in other people, it may never be seen, Lori.
Yeah, I was thinking, okay, well, someone who claims to have no faith or to be a-religious could still be able, and very many are, able to see good in other people. But what I don't think they realize is what they're seeing is God. They just don't know it.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, you talk about calling yourself to task and account. This is one of those where if you really read this, I'm reading this little booklet about mercy, and it's talking a lot about Saint Teresa of Calcutta. I mean, you talk about a lady who really got this and who went out into the hardest places in our world to see God in people who were, you know, at times physically repulsive, would be physically repulsive to most of us. That's a call. I mean, wow. I struggle with it when I drive by a corner and there's a person holding a homeless sign. I struggle to even make myself make eye contact. That's, you know, that's tough stuff. It's real stuff, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, our next quotation is from Marilynne Robinson. Quote, "Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except a little willingness to see. Only, who could have the courage to see it?" Now, considering that you have been having, Alice, if I may reveal, something of a transformative view of the world lately, how do you react to this quotation? And if that's all it takes to see the world that way, why can't more of us do it?
Well, I think there are senses that we have that we just can't always, we just are not always in touch with. I really do believe that there are times in our lives where it's like at the retreat I was on at the woods, they talked about thin spaces, where times where God is closer to human existence than other times. So the distance is thin, and often that happens on retreats. But I think most of us probably have experienced that. Do you know experientially what I'm talking about?
Yes, I absolutely do.
So I kind of think that is a piece of, A, that's a piece of what's happening for me, but B, it really tucks right into this quotation. There are times where you can look out into the world and there is just kind of a, I don't know, call it providence, call it alignment of the stars, but where whatever you see becomes something new because of the view that you're bringing to it, because you're doing it. I think love has a lot to do with it. And I think that is a way of helping draw other people to spirituality, to God, to Jesus Christ. It's just letting yourself share that view, having your eyes open enough to see that view and share it with other people. But it does take courage, because most of us are pretty conditioned, and I have certainly been conditioned to begin to immediately tell you all the reasons why I wouldn't, shouldn't, or couldn't do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only through this spiritual direction I've been going through and other things that I've been saying, you know, let's think about possibilities. Let's not think about obstacles, because at the end of the day, the possibilities can be or not be. You know, but the obstacles will be if we say they are going to be.
Wow. Boy. Okay, that's something I'm going to have to jot down. I really connected especially to the end of this quotation because of everything you're saying. I kind of feel like if I could see all of the possibility and wonder in this world, and I saw God's path for me like clear as day, how would that change my life? And I think that would be really frightening in a way, because it would demand that I quit worrying and that I do something radical. And that's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It is, but I think the journey of faith and where kind of the compilation of these quotations and the way you've ordered them is leading us is, you know, none of us are asked to do any of that alone. I mean, it's really learning, I think, to figure out how to allow yourself to be led. And that's the courageous part, I think, is just letting go of having to be the leader and having to have all the details planned and just saying, okay, there's clearly something going on here. Let's just be drawn to it. I mean, that's part of what the Ignatian practices are about. It's about being drawn, allowing yourself to be drawn to things that are attractive and move away from things that are not. And that's not a like-dislike thing. It's more than that. But I think you get my feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So much good stuff there. Our next quotation is from Eudora Welty, Don't Make a Joke.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I know. Fans of the show will know that We joke about Eudora, dear Eudora. Mm-hmm. We love, but we joke. Anyway, the quotation is, "The events of our lives happen in a sequence of time, but in their significance to ourselves, they find their own order, the continuous thread of revelation." How do you see that operating in your own life, Alice?
This is of the grouping that you've selected. This is the one that really resonates the most to me.
Really?
And I think, why couldn't I write this stuff? Darn it, I think it, but I don't put it in the same words. Well, sure. I mean, here it is. The events of our lives happen in a sequence of time, but in their significance to ourselves, they find their own order. The thread, the continuous thread of revelation. So an example for me of how I would see this lived out in my own life would be going back and looking through a journal. A journal is a sequential record of things if you're handling your journaling that way. So generally people put dates, or it's written in some succession of time. But, you know, as you step back through it, you realize you can pick and choose what order you go back to, what stands out, what doesn't. I mean, the point of this is, I think, even people who've lived 87 years can learn new things about themselves and about their lives, or can see places where they did learn but they didn't get it and do something about it late. And just like a really young person who hasn't had the kind of sequential years of existence can have a really old, wise soul. It means it doesn't have to be all building block oriented. It doesn't have to be the traditional way we expect it. It can come from surprising sources at different times.
Yeah. Now, when I think about this sort of thing, it occurs to me that maybe there exist people who don't look at the events of their lives and make of them a continuous thread of revelation, who just experience life and that's what it is and that's all it is. Do you think that there are people like that? Do you think that the strong human urge to make meaning out of things overcomes that for most people?
Well, you know, one of my major struggles is that I have trouble believing that everybody isn't just like I am. So, given that, I think probably there are a lot of people who come pretty far in their lives and don't spend a lot of time thinking deeply about their life. But boy, Lori, you know, given that almost everybody, very few people get through life completely with no skinned knees, no bumped heads.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much everybody at some point has some major life event or is in love with or living or married with somebody who does that kind of rocks your world. It's pretty rare for people to get through life without that and be totally oblivious to it. So I think that would suggest to me that most people do try to make some sense of it. Now, do they get this deep? Probably not.
You hope so.
Yeah.
At least I hope so.
Yeah. I do too. I think a lot goes on in the inner workings of the human heart that even within ourselves that we just don't really know because we don't even have the words to talk about it sometimes.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to a quotation from St. Macarius. I hope I'm saying that right. The Great. "The heart is but a small vessel, yet there are lions. There are poisonous beasts and all the treasures of evil. And there are rough, uneven roads. There are precipices. But there is also God, also the angels, the life and the kingdom, the light and the apostles, the treasures of grace. There are all things." What's your general reaction to this quotation, Alice? And what sort of things do you see when you look in your own heart?
Well, I have to say I don't particularly like this.
Really?
It's a little darker than I like to think about. And you know, I'm kind of into the nature stuff, so the beasts and the lions and stuff don't bother me. But I guess I like to think that my heart, or my, I don't know what the difference between a heart and a soul is really in some ways. I like to think that there's only goodness there. But I guess as I think about it, I mean, uneven roads, precipices, all the stuff of life is in there. I guess I just like to think my heart is this special little safe, good God place in me that maybe all the other lions and beasts and poisonous snakes are in my feet and arms and extremities and stuff like that. I don't know. Coming out my mouth.
It's not the way I envisioned it.
What do you think? Go ahead.
Honestly, I look at my heart and I think, my heart is, if it's like anything, it's like a puppy. You know, like a puppy that wants to love everybody and everything, but doesn't really have the savvy or the elegance to do it in the best way. You know what I mean? So I can be like over-enthusiastic. I can be too reserved. I think I base my love too much on how it's received instead of just giving it freely without expectation if I have to be really deep and serious about it.
Yeah. I can resonate with that. I feel the same way. And isn't it hard to determine the real underpinnings of why you give and why you do the things you do and why you serve and all that, which I think ties into what you just said. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing I love about Eighth Day Books is that they have an entire section marked C.S. Lewis and Friends, which, you know, might as well say Friends of Lori. So it is fitting that our next bookmark contains a quotation by Lewis himself. Quote, "No book is really worth reading at the age of 10, which is not equally and often far more worth reading at the age of 50 and beyond." Can you think of some books like that, Alice?
I think you're gonna be sorely disappointed in my answer.
Oh no!
Because I really focused some thought on this. Well, I think I am not maybe the kind of childhood reader that people might think I was. I can't really recall that many things that I read as a little child. The Petite Prince is one, but that was when I was in high school. I mean, that's one that I've read again. But most of the things that I think, I agree with this quotation, but I did not have a lot of childhood books that I just keep going back to and back to. Now, later in life I have. Like all the college books that we read, I have reread at some point, even the Eudora Welty. But I can't really like throw a list out at you like I suspect you will be able to.
Really? I'm shocked by that.
I knew you would be, and I was when I thought about it today. I'm like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing.
I really imagined that you had a kind of a group of books that you went back to over and over.
I'm sorry to disappoint, Lori.
Well, okay, I'm just going to forge ahead then. The Narnia books,
ahead,
of course. The books of Ellen Raskin, especially The Mysterious Disappearance of Noel, which is the funniest and coolest book ever written and still my favorite since I was 9 years old. Also, The Tattooed Potato and Other Clues, which makes my heart soar like a singing bird, which is something that you would get if you had read the book. But, my favorite bits, even of the Bible, they're my childhood favorites. It's like the literary equivalent of comfort food. And I do have, my goodness, especially when I was a kid, my mom has a joke where her brother used to say, "Mom, Joan's reading Little Women again." That's me too. I kept reading the same books over and over.
That is so cool. Now, I have some definite favorite childhood Bible stories. I mean, like Jonah and Noah. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably the classic kid ones. But, it's so weird, Lori. Most of the books you reference, I have read, but I don't think I read them as a child. So some of them I need to reread. Like Ellen Raskin thing, I've never read that. I'll have to pick that up.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's about word puzzles and it's just joy and happiness and everything that is good on this earth.
Oh, that's great.
So, pretty good book.
That's very cool.
Well, here's our last quotation of the day from Elder Thaddeus from the book Our Thoughts Determine Our Lives. "When there is no human being that can bring us comfort, then God comes and brings us joy through a book." And I would like to reiterate, I'm sure I've told this story before, that when I am down and my heart is aching, I think of this quotation from Joan Didion's book, Democracy. I'd be leery of those ice cubes if I were you, Francis. Ice cubes are not a national craft, which means nothing to anybody but me, and it makes me laugh every single time.
And that's a wonderful, I just think that's a wonderful gift that you have, that though that quotations and things you've read just are a part of your, of who you are. They just are part of your being. I think that is awesome. I love that.
Can you think of any books that, that you would say bring you comfort when you're in a bad place?
Well, I most definitely, I mean, and I'm shocked that I'm saying this because I will tell you there were times in my life where I would have said the opposite and been critical of other people for it. But Scripture really does, some Scripture passages really do give me comfort. Psalm 23 is one.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a Corinthians passage about strength and weakness. There are just a number of them that just can really, the Psalms, surprisingly now in my life, are just a huge comfort. So that's one. I am finding things like this Annie Dillard, Teaching a Stone to Talk, that
yeah.
you know, you've shared a lot from that. And there's a couple of Barbara Kingsolver novels that are just, I don't know. I can't even tell you the specific pieces, but the books just do place me somewhere that is quiet and deep and allows me a lot of space and just makes me feel like the world is so giant and there's so much left that can come, and yet it's so simple. I mean, Annie Dillard is, did I say Annie Dillon? Annie Dillard is really just an interesting person to me, interesting author.
Now, do you find that, I often find, that God brings me exactly what I need, whether that's comfort or whether that's some sort of a, I don't know, a prompt, an insight through a book that I'm reading?
Yeah.
Like
oh,
moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes I will make notes about different things, or, you know, you make margin notes just like I do, I'm sure. And I do that a lot in my Bible. And I mean, it just happened this morning. It was something that I just happened to flip to the back of my Bible, and I have a bunch of references to Scripture passages. And I thought, why would I have written that down? And I opened it and I thought, oh my gosh. So yeah, no, I definitely open things and read things that I'm supposed to read in a given day. Now, do you do this? Do you read things and think, oh, that would be so helpful to so-and-so, or I should share that with such-and-such? Or,
yes.
Do you do that?
Yes, I do. Often poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody responds to poetry, I know. But for me, I think poetry says the most in the fewest words.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. It's just interesting. So I wonder if when most other people read, they think about how reading or specific things will impact a person, you know, another person that they know well. It's kind of interesting.
Well, if they do, I encourage them to pass along the, you know, tell them to read the book, because I love when people suggest books to me.
I do too, because sometimes it just makes me want to talk to the person about what they liked, what they were attracted to. Because you and I've done that. You've read something or I've read something, and we're like, "Yeah, I don't get it. You're going to have to get me there." And I think that's great. I mean, you know, we learn something new about one another.
Right. Well, that's our time for this week. If you ever find yourself in Wichita, Kansas, I urge you to make a pilgrimage to 8th Day Books. You won't regret it. Until next week, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Have a great week.